It is August the 15th, 2011. I am Steve Gerwick, the webmaster of Gerwick.net. That's G-E-R-W-E-C-K.net, Gerwick.net. And tonight we're welcoming to the website a member of the legendary Hart family, the mother of D.H. Smith or Harry Smith, obviously the sister of Owen and Brett, and the daughter of the legendary Stu Hart. Tonight it's a very beautiful Diana Hart. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, Steve. I'm fine, thank you. Thanks for having me on your show.
It's a pleasure having you here, and as I was telling you offline, we've been big fans of the Hart family for so long, and I was just telling Diana that we've probably watched the Wrestling with Shadows DVD about 30 times. I think that's probably the all-time best wrestling DVD of all time, documentary for sure. And I guess first thing, Diana, what's going on with you, and what's going on in your personal life right now?
Let's see. Well, I live down in Tampa now with Harry and Georgia, my daughter Georgia. And I've been down here for a couple of years, and I'm learning Spanish and French right now so I can hopefully get a job, a better job than, I don't know, just it's good to keep learning something. But French is the second language to English in Canada, and Spanish is quite prevalent down here, especially in Florida. So I'm trying to learn those, but I'm having a lot of difficulty with retaining what I'm learning. But I got kind of the idea from my son Harry, because he took it upon himself to just not take the classes because he was wrestling full time, but he bought the Rosetta Stone sets or series for Japanese, to learn Japanese, and he speaks it quite well. And I thought, well, if I go to school and I'm, getting the attention of classmates and the teacher, I, certainly can, fumble my way through it, but it's really hard, and I don't know sometimes what I'm doing or where I'm going, but I've got a few little projects on the go. I'll get to that later, but I guess in my personal life, I'll just say there's nobody in the world like Davey, so I think I was lucky to have ever had that kind of relationship at all, and to have had it for 20 years, and when he did pass away, that we had a wonderful reconciliation for a few months, and in a way it was like I lost him twice, but at least despite whatever anyone heard about his death, all I can say in his defense and my family's defense is the night before he died, he was with his family and me, and it was one of the nicest nights that we had had in ever. It was just, it was lovely, and I'm glad that we got that. If that was God, or if Davey knew his, I don't know, he was quite, special. Maybe he knew his body was gonna give out on him, but he was with us the night before he died, and he made such a fuss over all of us. It was unforgettable. And it's funny, I've been in touch with a psychic had contacted my daughter and said that my mom, I'm curious about psychics and mediums and clairvoyance, and I don't know, there's no scientific proof to some things, but there's no scientific proof to a lot of things in the Bible either, so I don't want to get too far out here, but this psychic contacted my daughter on Facebook and said that she'd been getting these really strange urgent messages from my mom and first from Davey, and then my mom and Owen, and that they needed to get a message to me that some very strange questions. Like my mom wanted to know what happened to her chair, which I know very well about her chair. And that was a very strange question for someone I've never met. It kind of made me believe there might be more to her than, you know, just somebody trying to scare me, or, I mean, because it can be a bit scary if you get something that's unpleasant from a psychic. But in any case, my mom and Davey told me that somebody I'll meet I'll know by sometime in 2012, I'll know of somebody that is going to be very fond of me and want to take care of me, and I guess I'll just keep waiting. But they told me they knew I was having some extreme difficulties. I'm not sure why actually so many things about Davey being gone, because he has been gone for a while, but it seems to be bothering me more now than it ever has been. I don't, you know, even before Harry's release, my mom and Davey are watching and can't get me to hear what they're saying, but they got this girl to contact Georgia, and they told me to not give up. And it's actually a lot of things that were quite spot on, and I thought it picked me up in a way, but it also some of the things that I heard made me really sad too. But that wasn't their intention, according to this girl. She said they were just trying to help me get my focus, but I guess I just missed them, and I haven't had closure to some things, so it kind of opened things up again. But anyway, next question, Steve.
Okay. And, you know, you mentioned Davey Boy, which we'll talk about him, and your brother Owen as well. And I guess, you know, with the most recent event here, the release of Harry Smith from WWE, how did you learn about it, and what was your reaction? And I guess maybe what was his reaction to the release as well?
I think Harry was relieved, because they were just wasting him. They really didn't do anything with him, and I feel they let him down, because he had chances to do things in UFC right around the time of my dad's induction into the Hall of Fame. He had an opportunity to meet with somebody that could have put him into something quite nicely. And he was told, Harry didn't say anything at the time. He just wanted to know where he was going with things. And he actually had a great meeting with Antonio Inoki, who was quite interested in bringing Harry to Japan. And Josh Barnett was Harry's guest for the Hall of Fame weekend. And, I mean, there were a lot of things that seemed to be falling into place that weekend. And, you know, they told Harry, WWE told Harry, although he didn't mention to them anything that any of his possibilities, he just said, I'd like to know if you have any plans for me. And of course, they said, yes, you're going to be our next big thing. And all they did was, in my opinion, was just see how much they could frustrate him. Like, they put him in something. I mean, this is me talking, it's not Harry. So I'm saying it from a mom's point of view and from a wrestling fan's, a knowledgeable wrestling fan's point of view. Maybe not an entertainment, whatever they are now. Not sure what they want to be called now, a universe or something, but yeah. From a wrestling fan's point of view, it just seemed like every opportunity they had to do something with Harry, they just wasted it. I go back to the time they did that horrible thing with Justin Hawk, or JBL. And he's in the ring babbling like a big, thick-legged oaf about, your daddy's not here to save you now. And, like, why did they do that to Harry? Why, you know, and he just, he was just a complete, it was so pointless. This was, I think, 2008. It was so pointless. He just, you know, Harry had absolutely no offense or defense. He just was, just did as he was told. And then that wasn't good enough for them. They were, didn't think Harry put JBL over enough. And it's like, well, what, I mean, of all, like, why did, it's not that Harry can't lose or he's, you know, hasn't paid his dues or he, I just don't understand what the logic was to that. Like, why they picked Harry to be the one who got, I'm sure they got some, kick out of it, but, because they obviously have no respect for what Harry has gone through in his life and what he has learned in wrestling and my whole family, which I'm realizing now, I don't believe that the company has any regard for any of us in my family, and with what happened with Owen, I think they felt terrible about it, but it was just a terrible accident, and I wasn't expecting them to treat Harry like he was, you know, like he was this horrible, clumsy kid who couldn't do a thing in the ring, but, you know, you gotta make him world champion. He's a pedigree. You know, he's big, he's so nice looking, he's well spoken, he's well mannered, he knows how to wrestle. He, you know, they give him this nonsense that he hasn't got a personality. It's like, well, he changed his personality every time one of the writers got fired and a new one got hired. It's like, let's make him a villain, let's make him good, let's put him in a tag, let's take him out of a tag, let's split the tag up and let's not have the tag go against each other. And then they did let Harry and TJ go against each other once on Superstars, and it was a phenomenal match. But it's like, oh, well, let's put that on Superstars and let's bury it. And he and Harry and TJ had this phenomenal match with Sean and Hunter in 2009. And they just, I mean, that was, it's like, you know, I don't know what they're looking for. But it just seems like every time Harry, they gave Harry a personality and he tried to, you know, sink his teeth into it, they change it on him. And I don't see them doing that with everyone else. And I know he's happier now. I just feel like it was a relationship like, where he did nothing wrong. And then at the end of the day, they said, we're letting you go. We're not giving you a reason why, but, you know, all the best to you. And I just don't know why. Like, again, it's this thing that I have with closure. I just, you know, I know Harry's going to be better off. And some people think he'll end up back at WWE. And I don't know the direction they're going. I don't know where they would have a place for him, because they don't want to be, they don't want to call them wrestlers. And, you know, anyway, he's going to Japan at the end of the month, and I believe it's November 29th in Chicago. It's a Saturday. He's doing a big show with my nephew Teddy Hart for Billy Corgan from the Smashing Pumpkins. He's doing a big show up there, and I don't know who else is on that show, but I don't know if Harry and Ted will be wrestling against each other or wrestling in a tag or wrestling, you know, two people besides each other. I don't know, but he's also been talking to Jim Cornette with, I guess, Jim Cornette's with Ring of Honor now, or I'm not.
Correct, yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yep, yep.
And he's going to Japan for, it's the international, it's for Antonio Inoki's new office, IGF, I believe it is.
That's correct, yeah.
And he's been working with Batista, and Batista's got Gracie MMA training facility here, but he also works really closely with Josh Barnett, who's with Strikeforce, and Billy Robinson out in Little Rock. Billy Robinson was, before he got into wrestling, when he was in England, was a bare knuckles boxing champion and lost his eyesight in one eye. And that's what kind of collapsed his boxing career, but he got into wrestling and ended up working for my dad in the 70s and becoming one of the Japanese favorites. And a lot of people ask Davey if he was Billy Robinson's son, because they would go under different names, but you know, some people didn't believe Davey's name was actually David Smith. They thought that was a made-up name, which is funny because it's such a kind of a I don't know, it's kind of like a name you give if you didn't want to give your real name. Bob Johnson.
A common name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and Harry's working on a bunch of other things. He's got, I just did an autograph session in Miami. And he saw Billy Corgan down there, again, but he's been on the phone with him a lot. He saw Tori Wilson down there and she's doing really well. He saw quite a few people, but anyway, he's getting and he's got some autograph sessions with my brother Brett, and kind of things lined up, hoping to do some shows over in England and see Davey's father during Christmas. But that's up to the promoter over there. I don't know if it's Robbie Brookside who's trying to set that up. I think it's Robbie, but I don't know. He might do some stuff with Chris Masters. You know, they are gonna kind of watch each other's backs and get, you know, if they get a booking, try to get the other one a booking. But he's certainly not at a loss for shows or anything. And I ultimately think he's gonna do the Strikeforce and work in Japan. He's so good at the submission wrestling, I've heard from people like Josh that he's a monster, and you know, he's incredibly strong, and he's so long. He's got one of the longest reaches in the MMA, but like, if you were to measure how far he can hit. You know, I'm not sure what the length of his arms are, but because he's so tall. And anyway, maybe that's what he's supposed to do. He had his heart set on wrestling, maybe he could always become an actor, and where it's taken seriously enough that he'd get an Academy Award for something, but to be just considered an actor and like you're in the circus is not what his dream job is. You know, I'd rather him be known as a wrestler. So,
yeah, I think you mentioned, I think it was on your Twitter that you know, he was going to do Strikeforce next year. Is that pretty much a given that he'll get into mixed martial arts?
Okay. Yeah, he's got. I guess he need to they need to. You need to have a few matches, and I gather that will take place in Japan. And, you know, he'll build up and have to go against some guys and I think that he's gonna he'll make easy work of it, and you know, kind of like what Brock Lesnar did. You know, he went to Japan and had some victories, and that he had the ranking then, and then they let him go. You know, then like he was really like the horse coming out of the gate, and then look at where he went. And you know, poor Brock's got that awful I think it's diverticulitis now, or seems to be tormenting him. So I don't know if he's, you know, he might need to rest a little bit longer. I don't know, but I see Harry going in that direction of where he goes to Japan, and I don't have any doubt that he won't. I know he'll win. I just, because I've seen him, seen what he can do, and I've talked to people who know what they're talking about, like Josh. You know, Josh is saying Harry's a beast. You know, I feel he's not just saying that to, you know, what does he have to gain by telling me that? And that was a year ago. That was at the Hall of Fame.
I'm sorry. Has there been any interest from TNA Wrestling?
Well, he's not allowed to talk to anyone from TNA until 90 days from the date of his release, or
okay.
Date of his I guess the date that he was told he was being let go.
Is he interested in working for TNA?
I think he would if I think he would. I know he would have some incredible matches with Kurt Angle, with
sure,
with Kurt's amateur background. You know, it's funny. Speaking of Kurt and amateur wrestling, Billy Robinson is trying to persuade Harry to wrestle in the Olympics, which I thought was interesting. He said to Harry, "If you give me 1 year, I'll have you, and you'll be ready for the Olympics." Like, I don't know if that would fit with when the next Olympics happened, but he said, "If I had you for 1 year, you'd be ready for the Olympics." And I believe you can do that, because I know the professional hockey players go there to play on the Olympic amateur hockey teams. So
mm-hmm.
I don't see why an entertainer, why an entertainer can't go into the Olympics as a wrestler. But Harry was sort of daydreaming about that, I guess, talking to me about it about a month ago, before he ever heard about his release. And he just said, I wonder if I could do it. And I said, yeah, I bet you could. You know, your grandfather was Olympic bound, but the World War II wiped him out twice. So he, you know, my dad, that was his dream. And then when, you know, everything had settled down, he was kind of, I guess he figured he better get into a career and start earning money. So he said goodbye to that dream. But Harry's still, you know, I don't know. It'd be interesting, though. I mean, hypothetically, if Harry was a gold medalist for either Canada or United States, because he has dual citizenship, if he was a gold medalist in, I mean, I must sound like one of these impossible moms who just can't stop talking about her son, but if he was a gold medalist in, for his weight class in amateur wrestling, and say Strikeforce World Champion, and then decided to, I don't know what WWE would be by then, just WE or something, I don't know, but then go back and finish with them when he's, you know, in his 40s or something. Be a champion, you know, it would be pretty special.
I think when they were using you know, Tyson Kidd with Harry, and then they had Natty with them as the New Heart Foundation. I really had high hopes for that tag team. Of course, they brought back your brother Brett to kind of give them a little bit of a push in the right direction, and then they just kind of dropped the ball with that. And
yeah, why do you think they did that, Steve? Like, I don't know. I just don't. Why do you?
Well, it's obviously apparent from watching, you know, WWE as long as I have, is ever since the, you know, the era of when your brother and Jim Neidhart were tag team, that era, since that time, they really have not focused on tag teams. So even though, you know, your son and Tyson made a great tag team, that there's really no importance or no push on the tag team division. And it's one of those things when I look at, you know, wrestling today from, like, wrestling of the 80s, there's no managers, there's no tag teams. It's like a totally different product. And I guess maybe it has to change with the times, but, you know, I grew up loving tag team wrestling. Obviously, watching your brother and your brother-in-law wrestle, and I don't know. And then obviously your husband and Dynamite Kid of the British Bulldogs were another great tag team. So I have no idea what the mentality is that, you know, tag team wrestling doesn't draw today. But it's like, if you don't push it as being something special or important, of course it's not going to draw. I mean, what you present to the fans is what they're going to buy ultimately.
Yeah, I don't get it either. It's just they won't push that, but they'll push you know, abortions like Michael Cole wrestling Jim Ross, or like, I don't know who that was supposed to appeal to. I'm at a loss. I don't know why they've diluted and dissected the tag team division so badly. You know, Davey and Dynamite were such an awesome tag team, and you know, it was a universal thing. You know, they tag teams everywhere. The Wild Samoans and the Kiwis, which later were the Sheep Herders, and then the Bushwhackers, and I'm thinking of my dad's territory. He had the Kelly brothers. They were twins. They looked identical. They had just slight differences, but you know, and then there were the Hart brothers tag teams, and there was Owen and Chris Benoit, and Bruce and Brian Pillman, Bruce Hart and Brian Pillman, and in Japan there were like Stan Hansen and Terry Gordy against the Bulldogs, or Terry and Dory Funk. It's not like, well, you already said it. It's, it was something that was quite fun to watch, you know, captivating, and I don't know why they just decided to take it out. It's like, well, we're going to take the, you know, the weather out of the news now or something, like out of the, you know, evening news, or we're not running TV in color anymore or something. It just seemed like it was such a part of things, and then I hadn't followed the other promotion. I haven't followed TNA because Harry was in WWE, and although there's a lot of really good guys in TNA, but I kind of watched specific matches with Kurt Angle and AJ Styles and stuff with Jeff Jarrett. They were the kind of the main things. Oh, and I watched Hulk Hogan whenever he was on, and he's from here, and he was a good friend to Davey, and he had Harry on his show, and on Hogan Knows Best, he picked Harry. So I've watched it, but I don't actually know what their tag team division is like there either. Is it as incomplete as WWE, Steve?
No, they have better tag teams. I mean, Beer Money is the top tag team, and they have they have a division. I mean, it's not a deep division, but they do have tag teams, and they do keep them together for a while. Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin, the Motor City Machine Guns, have been together for quite a while. So And then, of course, they had the Dudley Boys for the longest time, Team 3D. So they recently broke up, and now they're going, you know, in their own directions. But they definitely emphasize tag team wrestling far more than the WWE currently does. But, you know, real quickly, going back to WWE, you were talking about, you know, the Michael Cole, Jerry the King Lawler match. And I could tell by some of your tweets, you're not a big fan of Michael Cole.
No. I whether it was Vince telling him, which I would be disappointed if he is completely to blame for that, but for Michael Cole's constant degrading of Harry, Natty, and TJ since they started on TV, like national TV, not in FCW down here in Tampa, but on national TV, I thought he was a complete prick to them, and just a very disrespectful, and I didn't like it. And then when they gave Harry and TJ a chance to go on the mic, like I can just imagine, they had, you know, 20 minutes notice, so you guys are going to go out and do live mic work with Michael Cole, and we're going to have you sitting at the other end of the bench. And Michael Cole, for somebody like, it's like getting, losing a spelling bee to a moron. It's like he's a colossal ass, and he seemed to get the better of Harry and TJ, but they didn't have a chance. It's like they, you know, and someone will argue with me and say, well, they did have a chance. They had the mics and stuff, but I just didn't feel like it was, I felt like there was a lot more malice involved in that. And if that was Vince trying to bury Harry and TJ and getting Michael Cole to do the dirty work, well, Michael Cole then never said anything afterwards, like, you know, good job, you guys, and, hey, you know, it was just all in fun or anything. You know, he carried it right on into the back, and you know, most of the camaraderie that I've seen growing up in wrestling, even when the bad guys are wrestling the good guys, or like even when I did the stuff with Sean and Davey, Sean afterwards told me I, you know, did a good job, and you know, and you know, just don't get scared, and you know, like people worked with you then, like they cared about the outcome of it. It wasn't just like, but I'm like, then when Sean and Hunter gave Michael Cole his wedgie and they pulled his drawers up nice and high, he was very uncomfortable with that, and maybe he forgot how it feels to be trying to be mocked, how it feels to be mocked on live TV, you know, when you're not really expecting it. You know, if Harry and TJ thought, well, they're going to go out there and look like, you know, dummies, then, you know, maybe they should have been building them up as buffoons, you know, like Toothless Wonders or something, and then it would be like, oh, but when, I mean, it certainly didn't make Harry and TJ, who were supposed to be the baby faces, it didn't make them look like they, I mean, it made me feel sorry for them, because I didn't feel it was fair, but, and it made me despise Michael Cole. You know, I guess that maybe it was their point, but deep down I think that there was some hidden agenda, and Michael Cole was the messenger, so, you know, don't shoot the messenger, but having said that, he never said anything in the back, like, you know, gave him even a, you know, friendly, you know, pat on the back or something, saying, you know, don't worry, you guys, or even, like, constructive criticism, like, you guys, you loosen up out there or something. He's just malicious, so, I don't care for his, and he just, I guess, feels like he's come, you know, he's arrived since he did that match with the Jay Cutler, what the, I can never remember his name, the amateur wrestler from Ohio, he wrestled with, Michael Cole and then Jerry Lawler and Jim Ross.
Swagger?
Yes, Jack Swagger.
Yeah.
I think Michael, and maybe others in that match thought that they had really torn down the house like the drunken clowns in the Dumbo movie when they Dumbo was like CM Punk and Randy Orton had such a phenomenal match, and I don't know, maybe some people think it was second to Jerry's match with Michael Cole, but anyway.
Yeah, anybody that knows me knows I can't stand Michael Cole, so you know, I think he's like one of the worst announcers of all time, so.
Yeah. You know, he's not even good. He's not even articulate. He's not.
No, he's horrible.
He is. He says.
He's terrible. I mean, I can't believe he's the lead announcer when they have, you know, one of the greatest announcers of all time, Jim Ross, just kind of sitting on the sideline, you know, and.
Oh, yeah, sitting there like a frog or something. I don't
know.
I don't know.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about Wrestling with Shadows. I was telling you that's one of my favorite. I think it is the best wrestling documentary ever made. When that was being filmed, did you have any idea it would turn out the way it did? And obviously, at the time, you had no idea that they would, you know, film the Montreal Screwjob to really, you know, cement that as one of the great projects. But when you guys were doing the production of that, did you have any idea what it would turn out to be?
No. Well, what we were. How it was introduced to us was it was going to be on my dad, and through Brett's eyes, and a large part of it was going to be about my dad, and then I don't know where it was, when it was going to end, but they spent a lot of time with my mom and my dad and filmed all of us, and you know, like they went to my mom's jazzercise class and filmed her doing her jazzercise, and you know, very affectionate family gatherings and the animals, and it was really we thought it was like I wasn't sure when it was going to end. Like I could have had them filming us forever because they were a nice group of people. Sally Blake and I'm trying to think of the other guy now. I can't remember his name. I should know him. I mean, I should know it, but I think I've got too much Spanish on my brain right now. But
see.
let's see. I can't even remember the production company, but they were so nice. You know, they could have filmed us forever. It wouldn't have been. It didn't seem like they were ever imposing, but they were going to go down and, you know, when Brett said he was finishing, it was with WWF, it seemed like, well, they, of course, will have to, it's only natural they'd be in Montreal to film Brett's last match with that company, but, you know, there'll be other stuff that they'll film later and, you know, maybe the Christmas and, you know, I wasn't really sure when it was going to be completed, but when they did that to Brett, it was like the whole thing took a turn, and all of a sudden it was this Montreal Screwjob, and, you know, it's just fate that they were there to catch all of that on film, because
right place at the right time.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, if they didn't get that, can you imagine, Steve, how the one-sided the story would be?
It would have been a still good documentary, but I mean, that footage, you know, backstage and you know, Vince ran into my hand and all that stuff. I mean,
and then
Shawn Michaels crying like a little girl in the back and
I don't know what happened. I didn't do it. If they didn't have that footage, and it was just WWE whatever they released, how biased it would have been.
Right.
And I'm glad that they had all these things like, because it shows that, you know, how Brett was, like he had his kids there and his wife and Blade walking down to the ring with the flag and, or well, you know, through the curtain. And it just was so, I thought it was pretty genuine and,
yeah.
It really, showcased, how corrupt it was and how they don't, I mean, Brett gave them, and the family, like Davey and Owen and Jim, but, and a lot of other guys left too, like Rick Rude left, out of loyalty to Brett, and just there was, well, I don't know why it had to happen that way. Like what, I don't know. You know, I've had different opinions, but with what I've seen of everything, I just feel like it was a real injustice to Brett. And, they knew that he took his position as the world's champion very seriously. And it's, shouldn't be a flaw that you believe in your character so much. It shouldn't be that you believe your own press. It's just that Brett took his position as world's champion very seriously because so many people, I mean, they would get so emotional about him and, you know, he cared about his fans and his character. He truly did. And they did that to him. They did it to Davey, too, but,
Yeah, you know, the genuine, the one thing that always stuck out to me was how genuine it was. And I remember, you know, they had the conversation with Vince and Brett, and then Brett comes out and tells Julie, his wife at the time, that, you know, they're going to do the DQ finish, and she goes, I don't believe it. I mean, it's like she knew exactly what was going to happen at that time, and then you had to, you know, you watch the documentary to see, you know, exactly what did happen, and then, like I said, it's amazing they got all that footage, and it actually got released.
Yeah.
That, you know, Vince somehow didn't squash it or stop it or just offer them, hey, I'll give you a lot of money. Let's just bury this project. And they still got it out there and got it released. Because, like I said, that's the most real, genuine documentary I've ever seen. I mean, and obviously it's one of the biggest stories in pro wrestling history was the Montreal Screwjob. And they got the footage. And it's pretty amazing that they could, you know, release that at that time.
Yeah. It is. It's almost miraculous that it didn't get squashed.
Right.
I don't know if they, I wonder, maybe Vince just, he really didn't think they had that much, I don't know what he, you know, maybe, I don't know what he thought, but.
Well, on the other side, you know, Vince did well after that because obviously he developed the Mr. McMahon persona and certainly that propelled his, you know, his company at that time was struggling with WCW and obviously the Mr. McMahon character feuded with Stone Cold Steve Austin. So he did well from it. So it's not like he was embarrassed by it. I mean, it was just,
yeah.
Like you said, you know, right place at the right time. But what was your reaction? And I guess, you know, obviously we saw what happened with your husband and Jim Neidhart, but what was your reaction really when that Montreal screw job happened?
I didn't believe it. I thought, no, that they wouldn't do that to Brett. I thought, oh, maybe he's staying and, you know, everything's been just kept so hush hush. So and then I talked to Davey that night. I was, flying in from Vancouver. I was doing, working on a project out there. And when I got home, it was Thanksgiving. Oh no, Sunday dinner. It wasn't Thanksgiving. I guess it was this Sunday dinner and everyone was at my mom's and dad's and I went home. I didn't hear anything about it on the radio or, you know, I just went home like nothing, you know, just oh, maybe catch the end of the pay-per-view and seemed like Grand Central Station in my dad's kitchen and my dad was talking on the phone to somebody and then, because there's two phones in the kitchen, two separate phone lines. One was ringing and my dad was on the other phone and finally Davey called and he's like, where have you been? I got it. it's not right. He kept saying, it's not right. They shouldn't have done that to Brett. And I said, I blew out my knee pulling Shane off, Brett off Vince, because he had had a knee brace. He had the special fiberglass knee brace built for his knee, and he wasn't wearing it because he had finished his match. And he twisted his knee, but he, you know, that was like just one aggravating thing that happened to him that night. But he said, I don't know how they could have done that to Brett. And I kind of knew when he told me that it was real. It really did happen. He said he was going to come home. He wasn't staying to do TV the next night. And he and Owen and Jim were going to decide what to do. And eventually Davey left the company and went over to WCW. But, you know, it was unfortunate, yeah, too, there, because Vince made, he had to pay a $100,000 fine to get out of his contract to leave WWE to go to WCW, and so WCW covered half of it, which they took out of his pay every week, and then Davey paid the other half out of, you know, our checking account. So it was a huge loss for him. I think it was a mistake, because WCW didn't seem to know what to do with him, and he hurt himself there and stuff. But, and in answer to your question, oh, what did I think? I didn't believe it at first, and then when I talked to Davey, I could tell how disgusted he was that they would have done that to Brett. It's like, wow, like what next? And he said, I don't know if I can trust this company to work for them, and if I stay here, are they going to just, you know, bury me and Jim and Owen to, you know, continue this? That was one of his big concerns, is, you know, where is this going to end? And that was his belief, was if he stayed, that they would just, you know, destroy whatever was left of the Hart Foundation, so that they couldn't go ever to WCW and join Brett. If Brett had gone there, and I mean, Brett did go there, but if Brett had been like super superstar that they hoped that they would have turned him into over in WCW, and then he said, hey, come on over, you guys, you know, Brett, or Dynamite, Davey, Jim, you know, come on over to WCW, and, you know, we'll be the, you know, whatever, the Hart Dynasty or something, you know, so Davey was concerned that they were going to kill what was left of the Hart Foundation, and he figured he better get out while he could, which is what he did, and it just seemed, as Brett even said so himself on the Heart and Soul DVD, WCW never knew what to do with Bret Hart, Bret the Hitman Hart character, and he just, you know, he just sort of never really got off the ground, unfortunately. And I know.
Yeah. I don't think they ever knew what to do with Bret once they had him. It was amazing that he was like the hottest star at that time, and they still couldn't. I mean, they brought him in, he feuded over the United States title, and the guy was the undisputed WWE champion, never lost.
Yeah.
And they still couldn't figure out what to do with the guy. It was mind-boggling.
Yeah.
I guess that explains why WCW is where they are today. I mean, they don't exist anymore, and that's, you know, sad reality of wrestling. But, you know, going back, you know, with Owen, he also wanted to go with your brother and Davey Boy and Jim Neidhart, but they wouldn't let him out. And what was your thoughts on, you know, they basically just had to keep Owen, I guess. They didn't want the whole group to leave, but what was your thoughts on not letting Owen out of his contract?
I knew how tough they could be on people trying to get out of their contracts, because Davey had a few fallings out, I don't know what's correct there, fallings out with them, and had wanted out of his contract on other occasions, and so I knew they must have really been making it next to impossible for Owen to get out of his contract, and he he must have just gotten fed up with it and said, I don't want to, I just want to focus on wrestling. I remember Owen saying he was also disgusted with what had happened to Brett, and he didn't feel the same about wrestling, period. He just said, I remember he was kind of talking with almost like bitterness. He just said, and he was probably really aggravated with trying to get out of his contract and couldn't, so it's like, I'm stuck here, but I can be bitter about it even if I have to stay, but I'm disgusted, and I don't even like wrestling right now, but I'm going to stick it out till the end of my contract. And as things turned around for Owen there, possibly was through, you know, a bond with Jeff Jarrett, because he didn't really have anyone else there. Like, I don't know who looked after him. Like, you know, Owen could look after himself. He's pretty scrappy and tough and sexy, but I don't know who he had for a comrade there, because Davey wasn't there, Jim wasn't there, none of his old friends were there. Like, you know, I don't know who he would have really, you know, cozied up to, you know, Shawn Michaels or Hunter, or it's not really, wouldn't have been Owen's style, because they were kind of the enemies to Brett. So he didn't really have anyone. And, but I think when he became close with Jeff Jarrett, things started to turn around for him. And, ironically, when Davey got hurt and then WCW released Davey, Owen was the first one to be working hard at getting Davey back with WWF, and he actually did put the phone call together in Davey's hospital room with Vince, and it was negotiated over a hospital telephone that Davey start back, and no one knew what capacity it would be in because he was so sick, but Owen got him his job back with Owen. Like, you know, he was going to be with his old partner again, and then Owen died. It was just so kind of
tragic.
So unfair. Not just on, you know, the tag team level. I mean, that's the very least of it, but it was just so unfair. And you know, he had bought $1 million house with at least $1 million, you know, a beautiful home that they had been building, Owen and his wife, and, you know, they had just actually were moving out of the house, of his old house, moving their stuff into the new one the day that Owen died. You know, how awful that is. You know, you're moving your, you know, books or whatever, and I'm not sure where Martha was when she heard, you know, she was driving in between the two houses, or, but what an awful, awful thing. I mean, I know it too, and every person who's lost someone, it's, you know, to lose their best friend is what a horrible thing. Yeah, that's just.
Yeah, and obviously the way, you know, Martha has, you know, obviously sued the company, and she's continued kind of threaten if they, you know, use his name or use him in footage, that, you know, she would, you know, follow up with more lawsuits. But, you know, it's been 12 years now since he's passed away, which is hard to believe. And, you know, we've seen, you know, Brett, you know, reconcile with WWE and get into the Hall of Fame. And, of course, they put your father in the Hall of Fame. And I guess the obvious question is, do you ever anticipate them putting Owen in the Hall of Fame?
I wish they would. I know it would be, Owen deserves to be recognized that in that way. It isn't, I understand Martha's, reluctance to let them do it because she doesn't want to give them that satisfaction of, but it's sad for the fans.
Yeah.
But I understand Martha's reluctance, but I don't know.
You're right. Yeah, we lose, we the fans, because the Hall of Fame is really for the fans.
Yeah.
And even though, you know, there's been people who's had some bitterness towards WWE or Vince, and they've come back to take the honor because they do it for their fans. And, you know, as fans, you know, we I would love to see Owen get in.
Yeah.
Definitely deserves it. And obviously, I'd love to see them put out an Owen Hart DVD
mm-hmm.
with all his great matches and all his, you know, great personalities that he did. But obviously, with what's going on with Martha here, it makes it almost impossible.
Yeah.
But I'd still like to see them at some point maybe bite the bullet or at least honor Owen's career. You know, it, as you said, it was a tragedy
uh-huh.
what happened to him. But at the same time, you know, his legacy is still with WWE. It's with the fans, and at least he deserves to get that honor.
Yeah, I agree, Steve. I really do.
Do you think it will ultimately happen? Do you think one day Vince will make that decision?
I hope so. I hope he can figure out some way to appeal to Martha figures out a way that it can be done, where he doesn't have to have Martha's
approval.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because if it does happen, I know that our family, you know, with who's left, would insist that it be done in only the best way, like, you know, in really good, like really well done and appropriate and honorably and respectfully and, you know, show Owen growing up. And, you know, it would be certainly fair to have Martha in there too, because she was his partner. You know, she was his, right-hand man, you know, like they were, you know, I know that it is not Martha's intention, it's so that she can be glorified, but I think it would be nice for her to be seen, you know, featured in it as well. My mom and dad and his relationship with the fans, because he, and the wrestlers, he was such a character.
Yeah.
He really was, you know what, He was just
he was one of a kind, that's for sure. Yeah. You know, I talked to your brother Smith, and I got the impression that, you know, Martha's very estranged from the family,
uh-huh.
that you don't even get a chance to see Oj and Athena, which is Owen's children. I mean, when's the last time you've ever seen your niece and nephew?
It was at Owen's funeral.
Wow.
And,
that's sad.
Yeah.
That's really sad.
Harry saw Oj at the rec center in Calgary, and you know, they were in the pool, and he recognized Harry. This was not too long after Davey died, but and Harry wanted to talk to him in the locker room, but Martha took him in the girls' locker room, so you know, that way he couldn't have made any conversation or connection with Harry. Like, you know, it was, I don't think she ever imagined that they would be, you know, 3 feet apart at a swimming pool, and then all of a sudden they were, and it's like, are you my cousin Harry? And it was something like that. I don't know who recognized who first, but then Martha was kind of like, oh, I better get him out of here before my son starts asking questions about, you know, when can I see that my cousin again, or who is, you know, I don't know. Oj is a pretty sensitive, smart guy. From what I hear, he's quite brilliant. So, you know, when he was little, I'm sure he had questions, and he remembered Harry's face. I don't know how many years it had been since he had actually seen him at the funeral, but he might have seen Harry, well, I can't imagine Martha would have ever let him watch Stampede Wrestling in Calgary. Harry was wrestling on TV then for Bruce and Ross. But he must have had an image of Harry and TJ that sort of burned in his memory, and he remembered Harry and didn't hesitate to talk to him. But when, you know, Martha took him in the girls' locker room, so he, you know, and then they got out of there, and that was that. But I don't know, and I think Harry or the grandchildren try their best to connect with Martha's kids. For a little while, they were talking to him on Facebook, but I don't know if he's even running that now, or, you know, I don't know. It's really sad, though, because my dad didn't see very much of them, and I know Martha was heartbroken when Owen died. I know, like, my mom and dad lost their son. I mean, how would Martha feel if she lost Oj and his, and Oj's wife? You know, and Oj had kids, and Oj's wife, you know, excommunicated the kids and herself from Martha, and, you know, it just didn't seem fair that my mom and dad got, I feel like I'm missing out on seeing them, but my mom and dad are gone, and they can't get that time back, and Oj and Athena can't get that time back. You know, their last memory they have of my mom was, and maybe the only one they had of her, aside from the, I don't think Martha took them to Kansas for any of that. I think she left them out of that. But I believe the only time they saw my mom was around the time of Owen's death. And then she brought them to the hospital to see my mom. And possibly Martha didn't realize my mom was so far, you know, well, she was comatose and hooked up to a lot of tubes. But I believe that would be the last memory that Oj and Athena would have had of my mom, her hooked up to a breathing machine and in a coma. And I don't think that was, actually my dad was kind of hurt, like felt for my mom that she would never have wanted them to see her like that, or she never wanted anyone to see her like that. I remember her saying that, oh, please, if I ever get hooked up to machines and I'm, you know, living on a machine, don't ever let that happen to me. And ironically, that is what happened to her. It was really sad. You know, they had her hands tied down because she kept trying to pull the tube out of her throat, and she just fell into a complete coma. But for the first couple of days, maybe the first 3 days, she was teeter-tottering in and out of consciousness, and they had to put her on a breathing machine, and she kind of flicker her eyes, but it just didn't seem fair at all that she had to be, why she had to go that way. Like, I just, sometimes it's just, and some people live like that for years, and it's so hard on everyone, but I just wish my mom, if it had to have happened, I don't know, like, cause my dad, he didn't want to let her go, so, you know, I know he clung on to those, I don't know, it was about 2 weeks, you know, he wouldn't have wanted her to just go instantly, but it was not fair, though, for my mom to go that way. She didn't want people coming to see her in that state, and she couldn't talk, and the nurses, who were so thoughtful, but they put a TV in front of her in case she did sort of stir, wake up, but they had, like, all these game shows. My mom never watched game shows. I think she would have preferred CNN, or actually, that would have been the only choice then. They didn't have CNBC, but CNN would have been just fine, or maybe, like Good Morning America or something like that, but it was just game show after game show, and then like some kind of really bad purgatory that she was trapped in for a while. But that's I wish something would happen, and maybe it'll take the grandchildren, but I wish something would happen with Martha where she had a change of heart. Now, maybe all of us need to, but so many of us have tried, and it didn't get anywhere. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I need to just keep trying. I haven't tried as hard as some, but some who have tried so hard, like my sister Georgia, she's been really treated, like almost had the door slammed in her face, and that Georgia lost her own son and heard about that. It wasn't quite like that. I should be giving both sides of the story, but it just, when I heard that Georgia couldn't get through to Martha, I knew there was no way I'd ever get through to her, because she, you know, she really despised Davey and me for going back to work for, well, Davey going back to work for Vince, and me, you know, being like his obnoxious cheerleader in her eyes, where I was, you know, almost like gloating about it, which I wasn't, but that's how she thought. I was just so damned relieved that Davey had a job again and was, you know, this infection he had in his in the crack in his back, that, you know, he had a broken back, but you can sometimes still walk if you have a broken back. It's just not in such a critical spot, and that's lucky that Davies was, you know, didn't paralyze him, but the pain was excruciating, and that and he still wrestled with it, but he, you know, it ultimately led to his demise. I mean, his poor body just gave up, and I was just so glad that he had another chance. He didn't want to do anything else but wrestle, and that was the only thing. I don't want to say it's the only thing he could do. It is the only thing that it was fulfilling
he wanted to do.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
It was fulfilling to him. I'm sure if someone said, "We'll give you, you know, this much money to be a talent scout or something," you know, he maybe could have done it without too much trouble. He had an excellent eye for athletes and stuff, but, or, you know, you can make $1.5 million selling cars or something, or real estate. I just don't know if his heart would have been in it. I just, you know, his heart was in it, even if it was killing him.
I wanted to ask you, too, yesterday was WWE's SummerSlam, of course. One of the most famous matches, of course, was 1992 with Bret and Davey in England. Of course, there's always, you know, your photos of, you know, sitting ringside, you know, kind of cheering for both guys and not wanting either guy to get hurt. And I just wondered if, was there ever any interest in your part, or maybe WWE's part, that you would come in and be a television character such as a Sonny, that you could be a manager of LA for Davey Boy?
Yeah, there was. They kind of started it later with doing something with, it was Davey and me, because I wanted to be a part of it a lot. I asked Davey many, many times if I could be with him, you know, doing something. And finally they said they would give this thing a try with Shawn Michaels, and it was right after Bret finished with them, and I decided, Davey told me it was like the night of the show. It was, I think it was like Bret had already gone home after SummerSlam, or WrestleMania, and we were doing the TV taping somewhere like Sacramento or something, and Davey said they want to start doing something with you on the road, and I was like, oh, great. So, you know, I went home, and it kind of, I wish I had a better memory of it, but it was very recent, and it happened very quickly. You know what, the very first time it happened, Steve, they wanted me, this was when Bret and Davey were wrestling against each other again, and it was in, like, Hershey or somewhere in Pennsylvania, and it was one of the pay-per-views for before Christmas, an in-your-house pay-per-view. They wanted to get it started with, I was going to go in the ring and with Davey and go to present Bret with a dozen long-stemmed red roses and tell him how proud I was of him, And then I was supposed to just go ballistic and attack him with the thorny roses, and he'd be, you know, all scratched up, and Davey and I would just go crazy on him. And so I, you know, they started, it's the first time I met, like right around that time, I met Steve Austin officially for the first time, but I knew him from WCW when he was Stunning Steve, but he was just finished in ECW and was coming to WWF, and they were going to do this thing with me, and I was really excited about it, but I called to tell my dad, and he was really mad about it. He said, I don't think that's a good way for you to represent. All of a sudden, I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that's right, yeah. I don't know if anyone else, I imagine they did, but I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if anyone else in the family had as much resistance to get into wrestling as I did, because I was a girl, and growing up, I, you know, had these weird skills, like Owen, like gymnastics and tree climbing and, you know, amateur wrestling and, you know, having, my dad said I had really good feet for grapevining and stuff, and it's like, well, you know, and I was just a bit too big. I don't know if it was, I wasn't bulky, but, because I was actually pretty light for my height at the time, but for gymnastics, I was getting too tall for it, and I just don't know, every time I wanted to do something like modeling or, get involved in the wrestling or go, you know, get into, acting, it just got shot down. It's like, you know, no, you don't want to do that. My mom was very wise and protective, and she said that there's nothing there that, for, you know, my mom and dad had raised us all to be pretty, innocent, you know, I don't know how to, I don't want us to sound like we're too, sappy, but, I just really didn't know anything outside of my family and the wrestling, and that was it. So I think my mom was very protective of me and believed, and she was a lot wiser than I ever will be. She's probably right that I might have ended up, I wasn't gullible or easily swayed, but I might have ended up, getting hurt, you know, by resisting something, you know, maybe getting, if not physically hurt, maybe kind of ruined in some way for not going along with what I was. I'm not saying that that's how it always works in careers, but I just, in entertainment or modeling, or I just wasn't very racy unless I was going along with some kind of a joke with my brothers. I could, you know, because I knew that we were all in on it. That would be, you know, do whatever they wanted me to do, you know, just because I knew that they would protect me, but I had a chance to go to Japan to model, and my mom said that was absolutely out of the question, and I'd end up, they would probably want to get me into prostitution, and I was like, no, I was so mad at her for not letting me go. I was like, that would never happen, but I don't know what would happen. Maybe, you know, when my brothers had been over there, and they, I'm sure, saw things that I would, you know, and maybe told my mom, well, if she goes over there, she could end up, no matter who it is that she's modeling for over there. But that was my mom. She came from New York, and, you know, she was very wholesome, and but she did come from New York, and I'm sure she was just protecting me. So, you know, when I called my dad to tell him about this idea of me and Brett and Davey and the roses, he said, no, that's not appropriate or suitable for you. And I just said, oh, okay. And I didn't challenge him at all. And I wasn't scared of him or anything. I just didn't, it's like, well, he would know better than anyone, so I didn't do it. And then a few years later, they did the same with me and Sean and Davey, and as this, it was just sort of thrown at me that night, like a couple of hours before before it happened. They said, you're going to go out and do this with Sean and Davey. And then another week went by, and as the story began to unfold, I was going to be a heel, and I was going to be the one that was pursuing Sean, and they would have like close circuit camera footage of me groping Sean, and they were more adult oriented then, so it was supposed to be quite explicit. And I called and talked to Brett about it, and he said, well, that's not right, and you're not a fictitious character like Sable or Sunny, you're Diana Hart, you're not, you know, even Scary Sherry, you're out there as Diana Hart. And, you know, when Dad's at the store where people revere him, and, you know, he's not going to like that, you know, where they say, what's with your daughter, and that whole thing of her, you know, being portrayed as a slut. And so I thought about it, and then I thought about Davey too, you know, how, because we, just the way we are, I guess, in our family, we take it more seriously, perhaps, than we should. But I thought, well, how does that make Davey look, too? You know, his wife is apparently on film, and he's too stupid to see it right in front of him, and he's still going after Sean, who's the innocent one here. But it was all a storyline, you know. I have regrets about not doing that sometimes, because it might have, I think it would have been a lot of fun, because it would have been a real alter ego for me to play. But at the same time, I think it would have really bothered my dad and my mom, so I can't, you know, how can I say I would have liked doing it if it bothered them? Cause, I mean, it's kind of impossible, because I, you know, think so much of them, even if they're not here anymore. I still, you know, it would have been a shame, I guess, if I had hurt them like that. But, you know, then later things happened with Owen and Brett and that whole thing, you know, and it ended up being a great thing for Owen's career. And, you know, so I don't know. So nobody, I guess, can say how anything's going to turn out.
True. And you know, we're closing out here with Diana Hart. We need to have you back on, because I got like a 1,000 more questions for you.
Sorry, but, I talked so much, Steve.
Oh, that's okay. No problem at all. And we do appreciate your time tonight. And as we close out, why don't you go ahead and plug your website or Twitter, or your social networks, and you know, how can the fans interact with you?
Oh, thank you very much. Well, I am starting to get more appearances for autograph sessions with Harry and with Brett. I guess the best way to contact me is either on Facebook. I'm at Diana Hart, and then I have a Twitter page, Diana Hart Smith. And I have, this is just starting now, it's a website that's just in the process of being constructed. It's called heartlegacy.com, HARTLEGACY.com, heartlegacy.com. And then I am getting a blog started, and it's called dianahartsmith.blogspot.com. I am going to be getting some stuff launched with my daughter Georgia and Harry for Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog, sort of memorabilia and stuff in honor of his it would be his 50th birthday in 2013, and we're starting on getting things, t-shirts and, well, we'll get, you'll have to see it all unravel, but, that's, oh yeah, and I'm doing the, it's called the teamyrg.com, and it's with, it's actually something I started following through Diamond Dallas Page, and it's a really, innovative exercise, routine, and it's a no wheat, no dairy, diet, and, I'm trying that. I'm actually feeling good. I'm not having, I'm having more success with it than I am with my Spanish and French. So.
Well, we wish you the best of luck with that. And again, we do appreciate your time, and definitely check out, you know, Diana's website and her social media, Twitter and Facebook. And we'll look forward to talking to you again real soon in the future.
Well, thanks a lot, Steve. You've been so nice to me. Thank you very much. And, you know, I hope we talk on Facebook or Twitter or something, because I feel like we're friends.
Well, I'm sure we will, and I appreciate you saying that, and I feel the same way. So we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much. You too.